I'm going to keep this cryptic talk about something bad you did in, and then everybody's going to be like, oh my god, what did he say?
Literally the worst thing ever.
The worst.
Talking about the worst thing ever, welcome to the activation phase.
Sure, man. Let's do it. Let's keep going.
All right. We're actually talking about Skraelings today.
Yeah, we are. We decided just because we thought it would be fun to talk about the Skraelings, because they don't see that much play in tournaments, and maybe more play at home games, but they're quite a rare faction, so let's talk about them here today.
Yeah. Also, we're looking at the Anglo-Dane board, and we did not feel inspired, so we picked up the Skraelings because it's a faction we actually wanted to talk about. I actually know little about it. You have a Skraeling warband, and you've played a few tournaments, I think.
Yeah, I played one tournament with them, and then yes, I can tell a story all about that later. Sure. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's more than most people have played with them. So you're probably like the number one expert on Skraelings.
Hell yeah.
In Western Europe. So congratulations.
In Osnabrück.
North Rhine-Westphalian expert on Skraelings. But anyway, they have some strange rules. So let's get into them. I haven't looked at the board for about 2 years. I think I played against them once. But they're kind of a strange one. They're a free battle board that you can download from the Studio Tomahawk website, and they have some special rules. And then they just have the battle board itself. They don't have any special dice, but they do have some special rules about the dice. But before we get into all of that, I think we need to go back to our usual order of things and just talk a little bit about the what are the Skraelings? What is going on, Tim? Can you tell me something about the Skraelings?
Oh my god, everything's flipped around today. Yeah, of course I can. I think, as far as I know, the Skraelings are the people that the Vikings that went to the northern parts of America found in Greenland, I think, in Vinland and Greenland.
Yeah, I think Vinland's actually the Nova Scotia and along the eastern coast. So went a little bit once they went to Iceland, they made the next step to Greenland, and then they were like, maybe there's something else there. And then they supposedly, I think there's some pretty good evidence that they were actually there, that they kind of actually went to North America, discovered it, or I guess found it there.
Yeah, I can never remember the name, but I think the guy that kind of was in America probably the first time was Leif Erikson or something, right? So I think, and this is basically the native indigenous people that they found there and that they kind of had some scraps with. And this is supposed to portray these battle tactics, and I think it does a great job at that.
Yeah, I don't think there's a lot of evidence about what the hell actually happened, unfortunately. I think they found some remains of houses, and they found some fruit remains in Greenland or something that suggests that they actually went there. But it's a little bit of a mystery. I think maybe there's some sagas or something about it. I'm not sure.
I think there's the Vinland saga, right? That kind of describes in a saga type that they went there and
Yeah. All right. Should have researched this one, but first of all, that's incredibly cool. As just you kind of start off from Norway or wherever, or Sweden, and then you end up there. That's kind of pretty badass, I'm not gonna lie. So congrats to them. But
in a wooden boat, that's pretty cool.
Enough about the Vikings. We're talking about the Skraelings here, so stay focused. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, let's get back into focus. Sure. So that was the history. And do you wanna go through their incredibly diverse equipment options for us?
I will. So it's super simple, actually. So the Warlord has no equipment. However, he's got a armor of 4/4. So no chainmail for them. No Hearthguard options whatsoever, so you just can't take them. You can take warriors with javelins and levies with bows. That's it. Good story. Can they take mercenaries?
As far as I know, they can't take mercenaries.
Nice.
So pretty simple. I think they're hard to come by. model-wise, but otherwise, I think they're a very cool beginner faction, because if you just have some unarmored indigenous-looking dudes, like Northern American indigenous-looking dudes, then you're good. All right, do you wanna just go straight into the very easy basic abilities of the battle board? And I guess before we do that, we need to talk about the dice and how the heck the dice work on this battle board.
Sure. Yeah, so like I said earlier, they don't actually have any specific dice. It's just like a free battle board. They had it in version 1, and they ported it over to version 2, and they kept that mechanic. So essentially, you have three different kind of color of dice. There's no dice facings. And the way it works is, if you have an ability with a single color dice, it means that any saga ability can be used to activate it. If you have
any saga facing, you mean, right? Any die facing.
Matter what the symbol it shows. If you have two of the same color dice, like a plus, it basically means you need two of the same facing, no matter what the symbol is. And then you basically have a combination. So you have two different colors, or I'm not sure I'm describing this very well, but you have on the battle board, you have a symbol with two different colors of dice. It just means that you need two different facings, and then you even have one with three on there, which is probably the only place you have a three dice ability on any battle board. And on top of that, you have totems. Tell us about totems.
Yeah, so totems are a permanent buff that a unit can get through here. So it's they are Auras abilities, and they buff up a unit with a totem effect, and they keep that buff until the end of the game, or until you put another totem on there, and then they lose the first buff that they had. So you kind of, with these totems, they're quite expensive. They're always two or three different die facings. But you can keep the effect that they give you for the rest of the game. So obviously, the longer the game takes, if it's like a 7-round mission, then the Skraelings will just have an edge from the beginning, because they will be strong in the end.
Yeah, so if you're facing the Skraelings, get in there early and mess them up before they can get their abilities powered up. All right, let's move on to the battle board. So I'll kick it off with the basic abilities. So this is very different from the usual. So the first one, where normally the hardcore would be, is just any dice facing, you can activate a unit of Skraelings. And that means a unit of warriors or a hero. The kind of warrior place, you have to use two dice of the same facing, and you can activate your hunters. That means you activate one unit of levy, so that's incredibly expensive to activate levy. Vinland is two dice of two different facings, so activate two units within short of each other, so a little bit of a way of getting levies activated. Finally, you have your combat bonus, and that's nothing special there. However, there's no buff for using a rare. It's just any dice facing can be used, but you only get one dice, either attack or defense. And then finally, the activation pool, you can place it there, and you can actually turn it to choose it to turn a dice to show the facing of your choice. So a little bit different there, some interesting options, but let's move on to the advanced abilities and see how this all works out.
Yeah, let's just quickly, for the activation pool, that means that you pay a die and put it out of the game to turn another die that you already have into a facing that you like. So if you basically only roll one symbol on all of your seven dice, you can pay one die from your seven dice to change the facing of one of the remaining six to a facing that you want.
It's not free. To make that free thing, very clear. Yeah, probably didn't say that as clearly as I should.
All right, first advanced ability is called Sacred Bonds, and it takes one die of any facing. It's an Auras reaction, and it says remove a fatigue from one of your units benefiting from a totem. And this is good. I think I play this every turn. Just removing the fatigues from your good totem units, especially if your warlord has a totem, it's super good. It's cheap, and you always have the dice remaining to do this. I think it's a great ability, and you want to have those totems up anyway on the key unit. So having this ready is just great.
So the next one is Tribal Tactics. Here you need two dice of the same facing. This is activation ability. So activate a unit to make a shooting attack, which generates no fatigue. After this shooting attack is resolved, activate this unit to make it, which generates no fatigue. This is pretty sweet with some javelins, and the new rules with the javelins as well.
Yeah, it's just in general, it's very good. It's even good on your levies because levies are expensive to activate, and then moving them up with Vinland and shooting with them with no fatigue, moving them back with no fatigue.
If you were going to do that anyways, it would take four dice if you're using your basic abilities. So there's absolutely no reason not to use Tribal Tactics instead.
I agree, and I think the Tribal Tactics is great with levies. If you have your warlord, just move them up with We Obey, and this is insane, of course, on big warrior units, as you said, with the javelins. There's going to be lots of shots, no fatigue, and
we
that's
like lots
great.
Of shots, we like no fatigue, so checks all the boxes. Nice.
Yeah, and no movement, and that's also great, so pretty good. All right, next one is Possession. It takes three dice with one facing each, so you need a common, a uncommon, and a rare on here. It's an orders or an orders reaction. Choose one of your units benefiting from a totem. This unit gains all the bonuses of another totem of your choice until the end of the turn. So you beefed up one of your units with a totem, and now you get to put another one on there. And this is an okay deal, because some totems are very expensive and cost three dice, just like this does. But this is obviously not a permanent effect where the totems are. But you can build very deadly combos with two totems active at the same time. So this is good, but since Skyrings really have a problem with dice, I think this is more situational.
So the next one is Agility, melee or shooting reaction using any dice. If your unit's armor is lower than the enemy unit's armor, you cancel casualties equal to the difference between the enemy unit's armor and your own unit's armor. So obviously this is good if the difference is large. You can also play this once you mess around with fatigue. And there's also totem, which helps you out on this one. So let's talk about the last non-totem ability on this board, and then we'll move on to the totems and discuss how they all kind of interact with the abilities.
Yes, so the fifth ability that's not a totem, and the last one, is called Ancestors, and it takes two dice of a different facing. It's an activation reaction. Trigger this ability after the resolution of an enemy activation. Remove a fatigue from one of your units, then activate it to move or charge. So, yeah, this can make you very nimble, just running around, taking a fatigue from your guys and then running away. Or, just charging in with your javelins is always juicy, even on your opponent's turn, especially if after you moved a fatigue through the sacred bonds. So in your opponent's orders phase, and then now again, so you're taking two fatigues away, and then you're charging. That's pretty great. And yeah, so I think this can make you very annoying, very quick with no fatigue, or very aggressive.
Yeah, it also makes you think twice if you're the opponent to move, like, for example, if you need two moves to get into range or something like that. It kind of leaves you open to getting charged in return. And, you know, if you have javelins or something like that, it's pretty annoying.
Yes.
Especially because, if you move and then the javelin the javelin shot is actually a separate ability, so you can, as the Skraeling, you can charge in before they get that that chance to actually shoot you. Pretty sweet.
That's literally the best case scenario for the Skraelings. If the opponents have javelins as well, they're very screwed.
Totems. First of all, makes incredibly cool modeling option. So that gives you a lot of hobby juices flowing. I think Stronghold actually has like a resin set, which looks pretty sweet. So
it's really cool.
I'm sure there's some other ones, but that one springs to mind. So let's talk about the totems. They have some sweet-ass sounding names, like first one, Eagle Totem. This is using two identical dice. This is an orders ability. So while this totem is active, the unit gets a +1 bonus to each of its attack dice during the first shooting attack it makes each turn. So it's like javelin crossbows. Pretty interesting option. Also, I guess there's no reason you can't put this on your levy to beef them up as well, right?
Yeah, that's right. It's the one problem I think it has. I think it's quite expensive for what it does, and that's just because I know what the other totems do. So we'll just get right into the next one. The next totem is the Puma Totem. It takes two dice of different facings. It's, of course, an orders reaction as well. While this totem is active, the unit generates an additional saga die, no matter how many models it contains. Also, the models in this unit count as Hearthguard for the purpose of the Bodyguard special rule. This is incredible on levies, because they're so annoying to kill with agility, keeping them alive, with the different armors just being saved casualties. So that's very annoying. And then even if they drop below 6, they'll still generate a die, and you kind of want to keep them safe with your warlord, so that's also great. I think it's just the Puma Totem is just like first turn or second turn is just incredible to get your dice all the way up to 8 dice and be a menace on the battlefield with one more die that you should have. It's a great investment.
Yeah, I think you at the beginning you said it was an orders reaction. Just to clarify, this is just an orders ability, but yeah, this looks pretty beastly. Nothing more depressing than killing Levy, and then especially if you're fighting a warlord and then just taking off Levy. This is horrible.
Yeah, I in one game, in a very, very cool tournament game, I played into Norse Gales, and my warlord was charged by the opponent's Norse Gale warlord, and they did like 14 casualties. Through with their heavy weapons and all their stuff that they had, and I just had to take off 12 of my levies and 2 fatigues for my warlord, and my warlord was still alive and ended up killing the enemy warlord because I could take 12 levies away, and I don't think any faction can effectively like do this and still win the game, but I did just because these levies were insane.
All right, so we found a use for levies, so that's good. So the next one is a 3 dice ability, so you require 3 different facings. And this is the Bear Totem. Again, orders ability. So while this totem is active, the unit increases its armor by 1 against both melee and shooting attacks and gains resilience 2. Its move and charge distances become short, however. So slower, but tougher.
Yeah, I mean, these guys are...
I'm not sure. This seems... like it sounds pretty awesome, but it does kind of limit your warriors a little bit. I'm not sure particularly want them to have this, but
I mean, yes, if you move them up already, yeah. Like if you kind of use your first turn to move them up and into a semi-safe space or next to an objective or whatever, and then the second turn comes around and you can play this, they will be invincible, especially if you give them a banner. Because having resilience 2 and a banner just means that you drop 1 fatigue every single turn, and that's just 2 dead guys saved. And a 12 stack of warriors with banner will be incredibly tough, especially if you can use sacred bonds to remove fatigue at the beginning of your opponent's turn. And if you can use ancestors to remove fatigue, move them or charge them to kind of make up for their limited move. So these guys will be absolute units to deal with.
I think the power move here is to play this on Levy. See the confused look. You are
I mean,
just all about the psychological warfare there. They'll be like,
yeah, you are the tactical genius here. I always forget. It's just, yeah, that is the way.
All right. I'm glad I could contribute to this particular tactical talk about this ability. All right, you're welcome.
I appreciate it. Yeah. All right, let's get into the Beaver Totem. It's another. It takes three different die facings again on three different dice. And while this totem is active, the unit can reroll all of its attacks dice. While this totem is active, the unit can reroll all of its attack dice during melee and does not reduce its movement or charge distance in uneven terrain. So these guys will just beaver around, be super quick, run through terrain, no problem at all. And then, of course, rerolling all your attacks is just, I mean, we all know that. It's just very, very powerful, especially if you're going into high armor enemies where every hit counts. And so this is a high value ability, I think.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing. I wasn't aware beavers were known for their speed. I feel like they switched the puma and the beaver descriptions, maybe. But who knows? But yeah, this sounds pretty amazing. All right, the last and final one is the Elk Totem. So this is using two different dice. Again, orders. So while this totem is active, the unit can reroll all its defense dice during melee and can close ranks, even if its equipment would usually forbid it. So this is the second kind of beast mode for warriors on top of the bear totem, a bit cheaper.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is a incredibly solid ability. If you you just play it once and then it's your weak little javelin guys are instantly so much more survivable. This is it's pretty amazing for to make your warband with limited equipment options just kind of do all sorts of crazy stuff.
This ability, I think, is probably the best totem on here, because that just means you go from not being able to close ranks, so only saving a third of the hits that you get. You go all the way to saving, because you can close ranks, that's half, and then you can reroll the things you fucked up, so that's half of that again. So you go from saving a third of the hits you take to saving 75%, so three quarters of the hits you take, and that's just, that's incredible. That's like more than you're saving like 2.5 times the saves that you would have made before, and that's just... You suddenly out of nowhere you get super tanky for no reason whatsoever. This is super cheap, and it's incredible. It's incredible, especially. And this needs to be said, especially with agility, because you're even like 75% of 12. There's still going to be three hits going through, but with agility, it's pretty easy to take two or three hits away guaranteed at the end of all these rerolls. So it's very, very, very easy to have a huge fight, 30 dice throwing into your javelin guys with no casualties. That happened to me 2 or 3 times in a span of 2 or 3 games, of 3 games. So it's incredible.
Yeah, this is like goth levels of survivability, basically. So
yeah, it's permanent. You buy this once and it's permanent.
So let's do a little, people seem to like ranking things. Kids nowadays.
Yeah.
So let's rank these totems. What is,
yeah,
starting from the worst, what is your least favorite totem?
That's going to be the eagle by a lot, I think. Yeah, for my playstyle at least. I'm sure people that like to hang back and shoot a lot like the eagle more, but for me that's the worst. What do you think?
Yeah, I think so too. I think the bear totem, I'm not sure, like that just seems so incredibly expensive, but if you just put it down first, depending on the scenario and the playstyle, might be okay, might be good. But yeah, Eagle Totem just seems pretty, like a lot of things have to go your way for it to become relevant. And then, so yeah, agreed, Eagle Totem, the least interesting.
Yeah. And then I think for place 4 and 3, bear and beaver kind of tie. I think bear is slightly worse, but in the right situations, it's a lot better, in my opinion. So, it's probably bear in fourth, because in 70% of the games, that'll just kind of it's expensive and it will make you slow, which is just difficult in some scenarios or most scenarios, I think. And so that's going to be my fourth. I think you agreed already thinking about putting it in fifth already. So
yeah, I think so as well. I think also the three dice makes it a little bit tricky. I would agree with you that the bear totem is four, and then beaver totem would be my number three.
Yeah, because its effect is incredible, of course, rerolling all your attack dice and not reducing your movement. That's obviously super good, but three dice is just expensive compared to what I think the puma and the totem do.
I think which one's the first one that you you make sure that you do?
The first one is the puma totem, because of course, the earlier you get the effect of generating additional saga die at the beginning of your turn or Oda's phase, I guess, the more value you get out of the puma totem. But I think the most important one to have up at the right time is the elk totem.
Yeah, I think so too. And just to remind people who from the beginning of the episode, you can only have one totem per unit, so you can't stack the totems. I mean, tribal possession is one way of stacking abilities temporarily, but at a price, but otherwise you're stuck with the specific totem. So how would you arrange your warband? What are you what's kind of like a good or solid all-round warband for them?
I think a good point to start at is probably like just 4 points of warriors and then 2 points of levies and your warlord, of course. Having the levies in 12-12 makes it easy to activate them with Vinland, which is activates two units within short of each other for two dice of a different facing. So that's usually it's going to be a common and an uncommon, which to activate two levies is an okay price, I think. Yeah, and then having your 4 points of warriors stacked into like 12-12 and 8, just to make sure you have a very good target for the elk totem and a very good target for either beaver or bear, because depending on the scenario, both of these can be, as we said before, super valuable. And yeah, I think putting the puma onto one of your levy squads, eagle if you have the dice because no fight is happening, onto the other levy squad, and then elk on one of the big fighting warrior units, the 12 man, and then bear or beaver on the other big fighting unit. I think that's the way I'd go.
Yep. And which one would you suggest for Warlord?
That's a very good question.
This is a controversial question in the scaling community.
Yes, because it's kind of difficult, right? I think the Warlord doesn't really deserve a totem, because the bear totem increases his armor, which just makes him into a normal warlord that's super slow. So that doesn't seem super great to me. And resilience 2, sure, is fine, but resilience 2 on a unit that already has resilience 1 is less impressive than just having resilience 2 out of nowhere. And then the beaver totem, which makes the warlord super fast and of course makes the warlord like terrain more, because reobeying is easier if you can move more, like reobeying the right target. But the beaver totem is always going to be better on units that throw more dice, because I'm sure everybody noticed, but there is basically no way to generate attack dice here other than the combat bonus. And so quality of dice is everything that matters here. So rerolls, plus ones, and all of that good stuff. And so the beaver totem, I think, should be on something that hits even harder than the warlord does, which, in my opinion, is a good 12-man unit of warriors.
Yeah, so you're really going all in on your two big units of warriors to do all the work for you.
I'm sure there's different ways, but seeing as there is no way to generate attack dice through your units, through your models, is I think the only way to make your combat efficient.
And especially because you're relatively, like, the five abilities that you do have are Yeah, except, like, three of them are take two or three dice to trigger, so that's pretty difficult to get things going.
I mean, you have one melee or shooting reaction ability, and everything else is orders, reaction, activation, reaction, and then you have the combat bonus. So once you get into these fights, your totems need to do the work, and managing your dice outside of there is basically...
Sure. And is this more a shooty warband with like lots of javelins and bows, or is this... Like, it's the shooting is nice, but most of the damage is going to be done in melee.
I think this is a fair 50-50, a rare 50-50, because your beaver and your bear and elk, they love to go into melee, and your eagle and puma, I guess, want to stay in shooting and just use all these attacks. And of course, the more you can shoot with the javelins, the better, because that just means that you don't offer yourself up as a target. And as I said, gaining attack dice is super valuable with this board. So if you can shoot two or three times through tribal tactics and a javelin shot, and then activating the unit, that's gonna be good.
Yeah. All right. So I think we've covered the warband composition. We've covered the board. We've covered the special rules. Let's get to the miniatures and the choice you have there. What do you use?
So yeah, I think there's some, like, these days, and this is July 2023, there are some pretty good STLs, like 3D printable files out there. But when I built these guys like a year ago, I used the Warriors Atlantic Aztecs and didn't use the... I should have not used the Aztec heads, but only like the Native American looking heads, like with the Iroquoise, what's it called in English? Like the straight hair in the middle, the black like the hair, like the, you know. Sure, that one. Yeah, and if you use that, I think they look pretty authentic, but the problem is they have like these weird Aztec looking bows that definitely don't really fit the Skraelings, because Aztecs are like Southern America, South America, and not where the Skraelings live. But I think you told me before that there's some metal figures that you can use for these.
Sure, there are, but I'm really not that familiar with them. So
I think footsore stuff.
Yeah, so footsore has some. Actually, looked at them for a while, but they do have. Super professional right now, looking at what they're actually called. They're actually called just Skraelings. So nice and easy. Yeah. You have warriors and heavies and a warlord. They look super nice. I assume footsore is normally pretty good at like figuring out what they're supposed to have looked like. So I'm going to assume that they're generally correct there. Just to give people a description, they have the warriors have obviously no armor whatsoever. They have some round small shields, like small bucklers, some javelins, obviously, and they have some pretty cool haircuts. It looks like most of them are just bare-chested as well. So, and then same thing for the levy, they kind of rocking the loincloth vibe, have tiny little bows, and then generally, I actually think I might have the warlord lying around somewhere, because it's a cool, very cool model. He has like a rib cage on his rib cage, looking very Mad Max.
I think he's in the Skraelings document. There's a picture of these guys.
All right, so look at that and ignore my description. But yeah, I think footsore is always a really good quality. So, when in doubt, and if you're interested in doing this, definitely pick up the footsore. Rarely regret footsore models.
Yeah, I've seen some people buy plastic like Indians, like the Northern Americans, indigenous people, to kind of throw out the muskets, get some spears in, and then just paint them a darker skin color, and it looks good. Yeah, I guess that also works.
Yeah, I think that's Warlord Games has like Woodland Indians for like the
you're right.
Like 7 years war period or something or something like that. And then yeah, you just have to not use muskets. And then you're good. Then they pretty much look like the Butzor ones, I think, give or take a few minor details. But that's your plastic option. And who knows? Maybe Victrix will come out with a kit as well, because they're a little bit on a roll.
I'm as far as I know, it's not planned.
All right. But you know what you can't use for?
Yeah, it's really sad, but you can't use Dark Age Warriors for this one.
It's a hard no from us. So, yeah. Unfortunately, one of the rare times. But
they just wear too many clothes, man. Too many clothes.
Restrictive. It's not okay.
Yeah.
All right, Tim. I think we've taken a little bit of a detour from our Age of Vikings. I think we're going to be back with an actual Age of Vikings book faction next time, but we wanted to mix it up a little bit. Maybe it's summertime, so we're feeling like a little bit giddy and want to.
Yeah, just have some fun.
Too much energy. Too much.
Because we usually don't have fun. Of course, I hope you can hear that in this
podcast. Okay, it's serious business. And if you're having fun, you're doing it wrong.
Absolutely. Do you want to give it a rating out of 5?
Yes, I would give them a 4 rawhide leather trousers out of 5.
I think that's fair. I'll jump in and say I think they're 3 out of 5 because their biggest weakness is if the scenario is quick and if your opponent's quick and if that just combines, then you literally have no chance of winning because it's physically impossible because they can catch you before you put down your totems and then you're just 3-4, just a army with just 3-3 or 3-4 armor with no ability on your board that can save you. I mean, sure, you can play agility to save one or two of your guys, but that doesn't change anything if your opponent's charging you with 2 units. Even if they have a fatigue, you're going to take insane casualties. And so if your opponent's quick, the Goths, for example, thank you very much, Florian, for that one. I will never forget it. If the Goths, they just wreck the Skrellings, and of course, if it's a quick mission where you need to grab some markers in the middle or you need to get somewhere, that also means that you can't spend too many dice on building up your totems, then I think they're very tough to play. But if that's not the case and you have a normal faction to go against and a somewhat normal mission, then these guys, of course, are like a 4.5 out of 5.
Yeah, I think it's mostly, I don't think they're super powerful. I think they're fine to include in Age of Vikings. Like they don't create like a crazy unbalanced vibe or whatever. Yeah. So I think it's really nice to include this. People are normally very happy to play against them because it's something new, especially Age of Vikings. Like that book has been out for a little while. So it's nice to throw this in. Also, it's nice to see what people do in the modeling side. It's nice to see what people do on the totem side. So I think that's kind of why I give them a high score.
That's a perfect rating. Yeah, I agree. I understand. Yeah.
All right. So thank you very much for listening to the activation phase. It's a little bit different from our usual super serious, but we'll be back to our serious selves in the next episode.
Enjoy your summer, guys. Bye-bye. All right.
Bye.